Good evening, everyone. So, just a chance to remain in meditation. Continue to sit, feeling the passing of time, feeling no time at all. As we come to the end of the year together, we approach the end of this year, which has been, for most people, most unusual and challenging. Many of us have had to adjust pretty significantly over the course of this year, and so much loss of life, so much to grieve, honestly. An election year, a time where so many people have lost loved ones, lost work, lost our way. Also a time where we have found ourselves to be quite resourceful. We've found ways to come together and practice together, even as we are apart. The beautiful metaphor of Zoom as Indra's net, each computer reflecting every single one of us, the same way our minds each reflect the world. And we find that even when we are apart, we are not separate. This evening we chanted the Bodhisattva's prayer by Shantideva. As long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the suffering of all beings for as long as space remains. I first encountered this prayer way, way back, I don't know, maybe 17 or something years ago, when I read a book by the Dalai Lama. And his encouragement was that we all take this vow. This vow to save all beings before ourselves. This vow to usher all beings across the river that ostensibly separates samsara and nirvana, to bring all beings to nirvana before ourselves, to save all beings from suffering. This great vow to save all beings before ourselves, and not just all beings that are alive in this moment, but all beings throughout space and time. This vow that is too vast to possibly comprehend with the mind. A vow that can only be comprehended by the heart. The mind files its objections. Wait a minute, that's impossible for me to go back in time. I can't go into the past and save this person or that person. This vow calling us into a moment that includes all time. The only place where the past and future exist. Calling us into this moment where all beings throughout space and time reside. This ungraspable moment. This infinitely seeded and flowering moment. We are called When we first begin to sit, we may imagine that we are sitting just for ourselves. We imagine that I will attain enlightenment. When I do, I'm going to feel really fucking good. I will be free. So our motive for practice is inevitably based on some amount of self-centeredness, because the self just arises. It's part of what we experience as human beings, and that never really goes away. It's just a thought formation, a mental formation that tends to persist in the same way that breathing persists. It's not really a problem. But we do get rather caught up in this sense of self. And when that happens, we can become occluded to a wider space, to a wider experience that is available to us in each and every moment. And in this way, we can close our hearts to the richness of life. And when we begin to practice, we so long to be free from these delusions that cause us the suffering of separation, the suffering of separateness, the all-consuming self-centeredness. And after some period of time, we taste liberation. We may get a taste of samadhi, mind like a clear, still pond. There's a beautiful story about Manjushri trying to, the bodhisattva of wisdom, trying to awaken a woman who is in perfect samadhi. But wisdom can't awaken her. And Manjushri says, I can't awaken her to the Buddha. And Buddha responds, oh, well, way, way down below, there's a bodhisattva of delusive wisdom. Call him up. He can awaken her. I think this is a key moment in the koan to pause and reflect. Why would Buddha want to awaken you, me? See, we're all the women in the koan who are in perfect samadhi. Why would the Buddha want to awaken us from our perfect samadhi, from our perfect stillness, from the place where the sense of self no longer troubles us, has quieted and fallen away? And at that moment, the bodhisattva of delusive wisdom shows up. And though Manjushri had performed all kinds of rituals to awaken the woman from samadhi, he could not do so, but the bodhisattva of delusive wisdom just snaps his fingers, and she is awake. Imagine sitting in perfect samadhi and you have a thought, I'm hungry. And your meditation ends and you rise and you nourish yourself with food. That's the bodhisattva of delusive wisdom showing up to tell you a story about your experience and save your life. Imagine you're sitting in perfect samadhi and you hear the cries of the world. You witness suffering. You witness the destruction of our environment. You witness injustice. You witness a child crying from hunger. That's the bodhisattva of delusive wisdom waking you from your perfect samadhi, that you may be of service. And the Buddha wants us to awaken from our perfect samadhi, that we may be of service, to take this vow to practice not just for our own happiness, not just for our own liberation, but for the liberation of all beings. The third turning of the Dharma wheel, that our practice is not just for me. And of course, there is actually no gap between this practice and the practice that we label as samadhi. And we come to see that over time, that our life of activity and our life of action is samadhi. We come to realize that our samadhi is not about attaining a particular state of mind and resting in that state of mind. Indeed, it has nothing to do with your or my state of mind. Our great faith is that everything is the Buddha nature. We have to see this for ourselves through practice. That when we sit in samadhi, that it is not different from when we get up off the cushion and when we do something in the world, when we're of service in the world, that is a new expression of samadhi. That is emptiness itself taking form. No need to protect the perfect sheen of the pond. We can let the cherry blossoms fall and make their ripples across the water. We can allow ourselves to be touched. All of it is an expression of the Dharma. And these notions of practicing well and not practicing well. Oh no, I've had a thought. Not a problem at all. Simply another manifestation of emptiness. Sometimes the ticker tape running across the bottom of the screen of your mind is a small, a quiet little voice, barely an intuition. And sometimes the words filling your mind are big, captivating. Neither is a problem. Just this, whatever is present, is the way. And so we don't need to protect our practice. We don't need to protect our state, my personal state. It's not about me attaining a particular state. It's about being awake, about snapping awake, that we may be of service in this world For as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the suffering of all beings, for as long as space remains. Our lack of separation, our lack of a separate self, which we begin to realize through our practice, through this gateway of samadhi, remains true even as senses of self arise, even as delusions arise. This delusive wisdom is precisely what serves us and what allows us to serve all beings. No need for quietism. Everything is the way. Everything is Buddha calling to Buddha. And so I offer this talk as we head toward, as we arrive at the end of 1 year and move into the beginning of another. This interesting delineation we make in the middle of the sky. Beginnings and endings, endings and beginnings. As a reminder, so many of us in this time of the year, we think of resolutions. Buddhism's resolution is a life of vow. How to embrace our bodhisattva vow to dispel the suffering of all beings. Be awake. Be awake. Thank you.